And Bodhidharma said, no merit whatever. Well, that really set the emperor back, because the popular understanding of Buddhism is that you do good things like that, religious things, and you acquire merit. And this leads you to better and better lives in the future, so that you will eventually become liberated. And so he was completely set back. So he said, well, what is the first principle of the holy doctrine? And Bodhidharma said, vast emptiness and nothing holy. Or in vast emptiness there is nothing holy. So the emperor said, who is it then that stands before us? The implication being, aren't you supposed to be a holy man? And Bodhidharma said, I don't know.
Because if we all started to act on the spur of the moment, without the slightest consideration or deliberation, everybody would think we were crazy. And that people would avoid us and call the police and things like that. But what they do is this. They start you doing this in the context of a disciplined situation where there are very rigid rules for most of the time, but there are certain instances at which all those rules go hang. And you're in a community which understands the game. If you're aiming at a target, well, the whole point is, if you think before you shoot, it's too late. The target's moved. That's why we have a thing like beginner's luck. You see, if you simply point at something like that, if your finger was a gun, I would probably have hit the light switch. And so you get a person who's naive about a gun, will pick a gun up and bang, and the thing will be...
It is a fun thing. And if it isn't, you're not meditating. There's an awful game that meditators play, which is competitive suffering. Now they go to some place where they sit for hours on end until their legs ache and practically fall off. And then come back and brag about they sat through all those hours of leg ache. Now, it's very difficult to put down people who are suffering. Because, after all, one has a natural sympathy for pain. But I sometimes want to say, for goodness sake, don't throw your suffering at me in that way and in that spirit. Don't brag about it. Don't one-up me by saying, well, I've suffered more than you have. People do things like that. They say, well, I'm more aware of my shortcomings than you are.
I'm lost rabbits, dogs, cats, trees, mountains, stars, everything. But why don't we feel that way? Instead of having this feeling that I am a lonely little creature watching the world almost from outside and feeling that it's something with which I have to do battle. Well, the answer is
Thomas Aquinas. They're not interested in the historicity of the Bible. They take that sort of for granted, but forget it. They're interested in its deeper meaning. And therefore, they always interpret all the tales like Jonah and the whale. They don't bother even to doubt whether Jonah was or was not swallowed by a whale or other big fish. But they see in the story of Jonah and the whale a prefiguration of the resurrection of Christ. And then even when it comes to the resurrection of Christ, they're not worrying about the chemistry or the physics of a risen body. What they're interested in is that the idea of the resurrection of the body has something to say about the meaning of the physical body in the eyes of God. That the physical body, in other words, is not something worthless and unspiritual, but something which is an object of the divine love. And so, therefore, I'm not...
You know, where are we? What's it all about? Well, the only way is to look and see. So if you want to find out what you mean by meaning, by asking a question, by being conscious, by being here, well, you have to meditate. And meditation, as not meditating on something, like thinking it out in an intellectual way, it is looking more closely at what you're asking the question about. So, you can do that externally, with a microscope, with chemical analysis, and so on. That way is valid. But it has to be balanced by the internal way, going down into your own sensations and your own consciousness. And the point that I'm going to make,
what am I doing? Am I just waving my legs back and forth? No, I'm walking. And in order to speak about walking, you have to speak about the space in which I am walking, about the floor, about the direction, left or right, in relation to what kind of room, what kind of stage, what kind of situation. Because if there isn't a ground underneath me, I can't very well walk. So the description of what I am doing involves the description of the world. And so the biologist comes to say that what he is describing is no longer merely the organism and its behavior. He is describing a field which he now calls the organism hyphen environment.
Every student of genius, actually, all schools are run for the advantage of the staff. And you know, it's a job. You've got to put people through there. It's a way of keeping them off the labor market. But if you're a very sincere teacher, you want to find out how to impart that subtle thing to the students. So there are books galore on methods, special methods, for getting that creative ability across. Professor so-and-so's method, Dr. So-and-so's method, etc., playing the piano and so on. Make it easy, but make him a genius. Now, if such a method existed, do you know what would happen? These geniuses would all be boring, because we would know how they do it. And the whole fascination of an art and of a great performance is you don't know how it's done.
Bravo. Absolutely marvelous. What an act. Here in this Christian soul, God is playing his most extraordinary game. He is believing and really feeling that he's not himself. And not only that, but that he is living only one life. And in that life, he's got to make the most momentous decision imaginable. In the course of this 80 years, he's got to choose between everlasting beatitude and everlasting horror. And he's not quite sure how to do it. Because in Christianity, there are two sins to be avoided, among others. One is called presumption, and that is knowing surely that you are saved. The other is called despair, which is knowing surely that you're damned.
It comes again, the origins are always in India, but the Japanese, under the genius of Honen and Shinran, who were medieval Buddhist saints, developed their own special variety of it. And this is a very strange religion, because it takes its basis as follows. We are living now in the most decadent period of history. That's what they say.
And this comes back from the Hindu idea that this is the Kali Yuga. This is the end of time, where everything is
all that is pure mythology. It is grossly unscientific. But most people believe it. It's common sense for today. But what an opportunity, though, there is in the new theology, and in this whole ferment going on, to get them to see this other point of view and realize that when you get rid of God, all you are doing is you're destroying an idol. And all idols must be destroyed respectfully. Not like those wretched Puritans who went around destroying all the saints' figures and the stained glass in the medieval churches. That was disrespectful iconoclasm. Respectful iconoclasm would be, for example, every Easter Sunday the Bible should be ceremoniously burned. Because if Jesus is truly risen from the dead, you don't need the Bible anymore. He's around. Available. You don't need the Bible.
You are really, deep down, simply a particular expression of everything that there is. To put it more strongly, could you realize as clearly as when you put your hands on something hard and you know it's there, could you realize that clearly that your real self
is the works, is the whole...
He wrote a letter on the art of swordsmanship where he explains the necessity of spontaneity in fencing is that if you have to stop to think about how you're going to respond to a certain kind of attack, it's too late. You'll be dead. You must respond in the same way as when you clap hands, the sound comes out without a moment's hesitation. Or when you strike steel on flint, there is no waiting before the spark comes out. But he adds, if you try to be quick, this will itself be a block. So when, you may know this, that when people are trained in the use of the sword, they get what Anne Clark bought the other day, which is a bamboo sword, to start with. And you can give a person a healthy clobber with a bamboo sword without actually ruining him. So the teacher may well have you work around the house.
Then your behavior has matured, and you find that you're accustomed to respond quite appropriately, as the Zen master did in lighting his cigarette from the charcoal. So also in learning the art of swordsmanship, when he has given up defending himself and preparing his mind for attack, then he's got a mirror mind.
This ghastly, what I call Christian ego, it's a little bit Jewish too, who really feels that he's homeless, he's an orphan. Even the Christians say we are sons of God by adoption and grace, not real sons, but by adoption and grace and sufferance. And it does not include any information to speak of about the functioning of my nervous system, my circulation, my metabolism, my subtle relationships with the entire surrounding human and non-human universe. So the image I have of myself is a caricature. It is arrived at through mainly my interaction with other people who tell me who I am in various ways, either directly or indirectly, and I play about with what their picture is of me, and they play something back to me so that we set up this conception. And this started very, very early in life. And I was told, you see, and you were told, that we must have a consistent image. You must be you. You have to find your identity in terms of image. And this is an awful red herring.
What's going to happen? And so what they did was simply drop that hypothesis. But they kept the hypothesis of law. Because if you can predict, if you can study the past and describe how things have behaved, and you've got some regularities in the behavior of the universe, you call that law. Although it may not be law in the ordinary sense of the word, it's simply regularity. And so what they did was they got rid of the lawmaker and kept the law. And so they conceived the universe in terms of a mechanism. Something, in other words, that is functioning according to regular clock-like mechanical principles. Newton's whole image of the world is based on billiards. The atoms are billiard balls, and they bang each other around. And so your behavior, every individual, therefore, is defined.
Always getting rid of the ball. You say to the other fellow, have a ball. See? And that keeps things moving. That's the nature of life. So in this idea, then, everybody is fundamentally the ultimate reality. Not God in a politically kingly sense, but God in the sense of being the self, the deep down basic whatever there is. And you're all that. Only you're pretending you're not. And it's perfectly okay to pretend you're not. To be absolutely convinced, because this is the whole notion of drama. When you come into the theater, there is a proscenium arch and a stage, and down there is the audience. And everybody assumes their seats in the theater and are going to see a comedy, a tragedy, a thriller, or whatever it is. And they all know, as they come in and pay their admissions, that what is going to happen on the stage is not
inescapable bad motivation. Nobody can possibly liberate themselves from the chains of karma. The more you try to get out of your karma, that is to say, your conditioning, your bondage to your past, the more you simply get yourself involved in it. And therefore, all human beings living in the end time of the Kali Yuga, or what the Japanese call Mappo, are just hopeless. Hopelessly selfish. So in this predicament, you cannot rely on jiriki, that means your own power, to get out, to get liberated from self.
The proletariat live in the present because they have nothing else. And the poor bourgeoisie live for the future. They are the eternal suckers. They can always open to a con game. So when they find out that really there exist without them, plants, etc., 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 when you see the intervals, the significance of the relationships between these things, it's only then, when you see that you are aware of the melody. Go back to the illustration I gave of the person who can't hear melody, who's tone deaf. He hears only a succession of sounds because he's not aware of the intervals. Now, most people are brought up to be tone deaf in respect to their own existence and the rest of the universe. They don't see the relationships. They are not aware of the unity. And so, once you spot that, you spot how everything goes with the thing, that you are one end and that out there is the other end, and they really go together, then you may be said to be living a harmonious life.
We
With that equipment, then, we are proposing to interfere with our genes. And with that equipment also, be it said, we are trying to solve our political, economic, and social problems. And naturally, everybody has the sense of total frustration. And the individual feels, what on earth can I do? We do not seem to know a way of calling upon our brains, because our brains can handle an enormous number of variables that are not accessible to the process of conscious attention. Your brain is now handling, or your total nervous system, to be more accurate, your blood chemistry, the secretions from your glands, the behavior of millions of cells. It is doing all that without thinking about it. That is to say, without trans...
Which is nevertheless a very mature way of handling human problems. It was, of course, for this reason that the Japanese Buddhist priests who visited China to study Buddhism, especially Zen priests, introduced Confucianism into Japan. Because, despite certain limitations that Confucianism has, and it always needs the Tao philosophy as a counterbalance, Confucianism has been one of the most successful philosophies in all history for the regulation of governmental and family relationships. But of course, it is concerned with formality. Confucianism prescribes all kinds of formal relationships, linguistic, ceremonial, musical, in etiquette.
Demanded, and therefore every good being